Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to today's audio networking call. It's offered by the Office on Violence Against Women in partnership with Praxis International. My name is Lucy Pope, and I'll be your host for today's call. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to just go over a couple of details. In order to eliminate background noise, all the lines will be muted throughout the call, but we're really interested in your questions, your experiences, your comments about today's topic. So if you want to jump into the conversation, please, please do. And you can press the number 1 on your phone keypad, and Shane, the operator, will bring you into the call. So that's just pressing the number 1 on your phone keypad anytime you you want to ask a question or let us know what your experience has been. I'd also just like to give you a heads up today that there has been some problems with this service in the last 24 hours, and sometimes moderators and guests are being dropped off the call. If that happens, please call back in, and no problem. We do apologize for that. Today's session is assessing multiple agencies in a community. We have two great presenters on this topic, Jane Sadusky, who has been with us on most of these networking calls, and our special guest today is Jerry C. from Oregon. I'll ask them to introduce themselves. So, Jane, for those of you who may not know you, can you tell us about yourself?
Thanks, Lucy, and welcome, everyone. I was saying before we got on the call that I have particularly bad karma with getting disconnected, so we'll hope that that's not the case today. And, yes, I'm Jane Sadusky. I'm a Praxis Technical Assistance Partner, and I have worked with Praxis for about 13 years now, particularly in developing and working with these methods of institutional analysis that are behind the community assessment and the best practice assessment tools and the other ways that we have of looking at our practice in responding to particularly domestic violence, but also sexual violence and a broader range of applications. And I am delighted then to pass this on to Jerry for a bit of an introduction, because she is a seasoned institutional analyst and will have a lot to share with us today. So Jerry, welcome, and can you tell us just a bit about yourself?
Sure. My name's Jerry C., like the ocean, S-E-A. And I live in Oregon in a pretty rural community in the southern end of the state on the, near California. And I've lived here for about 25 years. And I've been working in the field of domestic violence for quite a long time. And I was very fortunate, and we were very fortunate, our agency, to become a OVW Rural Grant recipient in 2001. And that's what really got us started in the whole institutional analysis project. And as you'll hear later, we've done a number of audits, some of which are a little unusual. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say and to talking with you today.
Thank you, Jerry. We are too. This is a very interesting topic today. So thank you all for joining us today. And let's turn it over to Jane to get us started with a little bit of a background on community assessments and institutional ethnography.
Thanks, Lucy. And I think for many of those who are on the call, this is familiar ground, but we often have people join us who are new to this community assessment piece of work that Praxis does, so it's helpful to give a snapshot of what that is. And you can always find more information at the website, which is www.praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S, international.org. And if you go to our programs, Institutional Analysis, Community Assessment, you'll find that information there. And it's an approach that's familiar, I think, to perhaps many more as a safety and accountability audit. But it's all kind of grounded in a way of, and a method of analyzing practice in a given community system or institution. That might be the criminal legal system response to domestic violence or to sexual violence. It might be the child welfare foster care system. It might be family courts and how they address issues of violence and intimate partner violence. So it's this way of looking at how institutions are organized and work in the world to either meet people's needs or not meet their needs. So there's a big emphasis on not seeing problems in terms of individual practitioners, individual dispatchers or police officers or social workers as not understanding or somehow being at fault for all of the problems in the institution, but really to look at how the work is put together in order to meet people's needs. So it has a big emphasis on identifying those gaps between what people need and what institutions provide. And it's organized around finding out, again, how is this response put together? What are the policies, the procedures, the ways in which different links and connections are made? What kind of training? What's the mission and the function? What kind of theoretical concepts and assumptions sit behind different policies and ways of thinking and talking about cases? And one of the distinctive things, I think particularly in the realm of something like a coordinated community response to domestic violence or sexual violence, is it emphasizes practitioners, those working in community systems and institutions, and community-based advocates working side by side to explore, identify problems, analyze, and come up with solutions. So there's different facets and different tools that we've developed over the years to do this, the safety and accountability audit being one that's very familiar, a set of best practice assessment tools for the front end of the criminal legal system. And you can explore all of that and much more on the website, of course, and always contact us if you have questions. So, you know, as I said earlier, Jerry has a lot of experience. In fact, he started in 2001 now. That's stretching back to the very early years of trying out these ideas of the safety and accountability audit and this approach to things. So, how about if we start, Jerry, if you can paint kind of a picture of how many different projects or applications you've been involved in that decade or so. You know, what have you looked at?
Okay. Well, we decided to start with prosecution, and at that time we were looking for an agency, the district attorney's office, that would be a leader in terms of some of the, how it was very public and was willing to have their agency go through the process, and we looked for a pivotal place in the criminal justice system that people could get involved. And then after we completed that audit, we moved on to law enforcement and to dispatch. And we have probably now 11 law enforcement agencies in our county, some of which are really small. And then we had two dispatch services, and so the 911 dispatchers. And so seven of them participated, and both dispatch participated. And so we worked on that for 2 years. And then kind of in the midst of that, we decided that we would do a little mini audit of our domestic violence shelters referral processes. So how people got to be referred to the shelter, how people, what happened when they were referred, and all of that. And that was really helpful to us to have. And we had community partners do that work so that they would get that picture and they would get good information. And then we have a it's probably about 40 years old now. We have a 24/7 crisis information and referral line in our community that's run by the nonprofit agency, and it's called Helpline. And so we decided that we wanted to audit Helpline, that we felt like we needed to look at some of the internal things to see how they were working. As long as, while we were looking at the criminal justice system, we better look at ourselves and how things were working. So we did a extensive audit of Helpline, which was really very informative and interesting. And all the while, I'd like to say, we had other agencies that were like, oh, when are you going to audit us? And, you know, or do the, and we called them safety audits. So I probably will transfer back and forth between that and institutional analysis. And so we decided that our next step would be to, at the request of the regional director of the Oregon Department of Human Services Child Welfare Division, to do an audit with them. And so that was great, because we got, it was so intense and wonderful, but big. And at the same time, we decided to, they wanted us to look at another program within the Department of Oregon Human Services, which is the Self-Sufficiency, or TANF, program. And Oregon has an emergency grant for victims of domestic violence with children through that department. And so we looked at again, you know, the analysis of how that program was working to help protect victim safety, where the gaps were, that sort of thing. And we're actually, we spent another year after that one was done doing a bunch of follow-up so that we could complete the audit for the whole region with self-sufficiency. So we've had quite a great experience of doing institutional analysis in our community.
So across that, that's a really big range of different agencies and systems, and you're looking primarily at how they get involved in the lives of battered women and their children, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Where our focus is, you know, the general focus is victim safety, offender accountability. Yeah. So depending on the agency, it, like Helpline, we only really dealt with victims, because we weren't tracking offenders. But at Child Welfare, it involved both victim safety and offender accountability.
Well, a couple of questions come to mind in given that range of things. One would be, what do you think has been most, what's been the biggest selling point or most persuasive in engaging and drawing in any one of these systems into this process and saying, yeah, we'll we'll go for this?
Well, we have an active council against domestic and sexual violence with a number of community partners in it. And so we use that as a forum to get people interested in the audits and to get them curious about it. And then with any audit that we wanted to do, we had pre-meetings where we brought in partners and talked about what we were kind of thinking of. And then we did an introduction that was more formal to community partners. So they could buy in and kind of and understand more about what we were doing, that it wasn't like we're going to audit their books. You know?
Yeah, that audit word.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, honestly, the audit team members were awesome. I mean, I was a team member too, but I was also the grant manager. So I had, you know, kind of a different role in terms of understanding the grant and all of that and the work that we were doing. But they loved it. I mean, really, there's so much to be gained from doing this work for the people involved, for the community. And so they were really excellent selling point for continuing the work.
Well, and it sounds like you really built off this idea of this approach being a partnership between those who are working in systems and advocates. It's not a finger-pointing, got you, caught you doing something bad.
Right. And I'd say that along the way, we used a lot of the resources of Praxis and the Battered Women's Justice Project and the other TA providers to help us and to guide us. And I think that was, for us, that was really important and helpful.
And what, how did that provide support to you as a local community in putting this all together?
Mm-hmm. Well, and our initial audit, for I think the first three, at least two audits, the first three, we brought in a audit expert from the Battered Women's Justice Project who would come in and work with us, and she helped to introduce the, her name's Rhonda, and she helped to introduce the audit process to our community in a way that gave it credibility and took it out of the hands of, oh, this is something that Jerry C. wants to do. This is something that our community wants to do. And she helped to kind of raise it to a different level with the grant, especially with the agency heads and things like that who were impressed that we were able to bring in someone. And then she helped us do the text analysis and some other pieces that we were still learning.
And so, I'm going to explain just a bit what that text analysis is in case that's not a familiar term to our group. And within this kind of full community assessment, safety and accountability audit, a big piece of it is looking at case files and case records and the text that kind of carries the story and becomes the official record of what's happening. It's something that's also part of the best practice assessment as well. So it sounds like that was an arena then that you had utilized some of the resources that were available to be able to figure out how are we going to look at reports and calls and that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. Eventually, I mean, we were able to send people off to the audit trainings that Praxis does, and that was always really helpful. And when we were working on some of the audits, we had Praxis-related people, Battered Women's Justice Project people, come in and to do pieces of the training when they could. And I think that helped.
One thing that caught my attention, too, when you were giving this overview of the work that's been done is that it sounds like within the community works and the coordinated community response that's in place in Jackson County, you made some decisions to do this, you said, a kind of mini internal audit of advocacy services, and then again at another point to look at the helpline services. How did that, the doing of that, affect then these other connections with other agencies in moving all of the different work along?
Well, I think when we did the mini audit of the shelter referral policies, and the we have an outreach program, the outreach referral policies, it really gave people on the team a picture of how things work in our victim services program, and they got insights, and I think that's true all the way through the work we did. They get insights into what's the real lived experience of victims, and they understand why maybe things are more complex than they hoped it were, or whatever. Some of them thought it should be, or things like that. And so also I think that it wasn't just an agency, and Community Works was the lead agency. It wasn't just us saying to other people, oh, you know, we'd like to do an institutional analysis of you, that we're willing to look at ourselves. And I think people felt a lot of respect that we did that and opened ourselves up.
Was there anything that came out of that where you really found yourself going, oh, my word, I had no idea that this
yeah.
was what was happening in our response?
Absolutely. Of course, just to take a look at ourselves, and we're kind of, our referral process sometimes is complex. You have to call, leave a message, we call you back. And it's not necessarily the best thing. So with some agencies like child welfare and, you know, we have law enforcement and a few others, we wanted to make, we were able to clarify that, no, here, if you work for them, here's how you can reach us. And that was something the community really wanted to know. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to take a pause here and see if anyone who's sitting around our virtual table has a question that they want to jump in with at this point before we continue our conversation. So again, Lucy, that process is, I should know this, but
oh, the number
I'm drawing a blank.
The number one on your keypad, if you have a question or if you'd like to talk about your experience with that. I was going to ask, Jerry, it sounds like some of these assessments that you did were with a different state agency than we normally hear about with an assessment going with a state agency.
Mm-hmm.
And so was it the same group that did all these audits, or did the team members shift, or is that something you're going to be talking about later?
Mm-hmm. We had a lot of team members, or several, I'd say 5 to 6, have stayed pretty much through the whole process. And we people mostly left because their jobs changed,
mm-hmm.
or because they no longer like worked for the agency that they were working. And then we recruited people based on, like, when we did the child welfare and self-sufficiency, we recruited people from child welfare and then from self-sufficiency, trained them to be on the audit team so that they could look at their own organization in those new eyes. And so we actually had we were very fortunate. We had a great audit team coordinator, Jennifer Miley, And then I think she's very good at helping pull people together and to keep them intrigued and interested and support them. That's important.
Yeah. Well, it just seems like you changed topics and systems, and there's a pretty big leap to a different system. So it's very interesting that you were able to make that crossover.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering for the people on the call, like what it is that you're interested in.
So again, we'll invite you to press the number 1 on your keypad.
And so far, no one has joined the queue. I'll let you know if anybody else joins.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Shane. Appreciate it. Will that complexity, Jerry, that you mentioned and Lucy suggested, going from a local system, such as a 911, say, law enforcement prosecution, which is pretty clearly defined, then to this big state-based child welfare system. Can you think of what some of the particular challenges were then in terms of defining roles and kind of communication across team members? Was it real different, or was kind of a big version of what you'd been doing all along?
our approach was that, you know, everybody who was a teammate member, including me and the audit coordinator, is on the same. We're on the same ground, and we all had shared responsibility, and we really had great audit team members that had such a strong team approach that I don't think we ever got into a situation where we had imbalances in power and things like that. I mean, the reality is people's work lives and their lives, and sometimes when we went out in pairs and did interviews and things like that, that some people had more time than others, and we, you know, of course, tried to accommodate that and figure out how to make it happen so that the work still got done. So those were challenges. But with the state system, really the biggest challenge was getting it approved by the state of Oregon. And I forget the term, but we had to get like this research approval from Portland State University, even though our manager of child welfare didn't feel like that was important. They did, the state of Oregon did, and that took quite a while, and we learned some new information in the process.
Was that Institutional Review Board, IRB process?
Yes, you know, so, yeah, that was interesting. But it was really I was curious, and it was a good thing to go through, because now we understand them. And the child welfare staff and management were very interested in what we were doing, and they were very willing to participate and provide what support they could.
And when you carried that out, was that primarily then in your county, in multiple counties?
Primarily in our county. And then some of it was in our region, which is a tri-county area. Yeah. And that really probably was because of our funding. And so if we had a lot more money, we'd love to do it with the state of Oregon altogether. I mean, with child welfare, and they would like that too.
So it sounds like you've never had team members involved in an assessment who you wanted to fire because they were so hard to work with.
No, we didn't. I know. I know that's happened, and I've sat in many audit calls or, you know, networking calls where people are really having a hard time and things like that. I think because we had some really grounded, I think that's the other thing, grounded and open people, that anybody that might have come along that was thinking to do that probably wouldn't have joined our team. So we made a concerted effort to provide them with lots of opportunities to give feedback, to check in, all of that. And honestly, for the most part, we have a very collaborative county, so that's good. I'd say that, you know, to have domestic violence advocates that are well-trained and understand a lot about both survivors, victims of domestic violence, and the perpetrators is really important. I think if we had had some advocates that didn't really get that as well as we needed, it would have been hard, much harder.
Well, that's, I think, a really fascinating and important point that you're mentioning, Jerry, is this way in which this is grounded, in a way, in advocacy.
Right.
And having that voice and presence very much involved in this case, because it's applying the method, if you will, to looking at violence against women in some aspect, that that connection with advocacy does become really important. And how did you go about preparing the advocates who were involved to get into this and then to have these different relationships with police, with social workers, whomever else was involved?
Well, we looked for seasoned advocates. We looked at who, in making choices, we looked at who'd had some involvement out in the community, because in our experience, it's harder for a advocate who's based in a shelter and that her job is to be there at the shelter to integrate so quickly, like people had to do, into doing partnerships. We did some, like, discussion groups and training with advocates to make sure that, you know, I have to say the institutional analysis tools really address that a lot, but to make sure that we, in approaching all of this, we were on the same page and we knew what we were doing.
Well, yeah, that I'm just getting this picture of this really strong and well-connected team. And I'm also kind of wondering, is that easier to do in a smaller community than perhaps a larger? Or so maybe it's kind of an unanswerable question in a way. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I think for us, I would imagine so in some ways, because there's less people, in terms of, like, all the agencies involved and things like that. Just, you know, if we're doing it in Portland, there'd be a huge amount of, like, probation officers who were in the DV unit, and so just the numbers get bigger, so it makes it more difficult. But I also think that sometimes in smaller communities, people know a lot of stuff about what's going on, and so it was really important that we kept at our core that this was all confidential, and that, like in the child welfare audit, we read 100 child welfare case files.
Oh my!
And yeah, that was very intense, and It took us several days. We went to a conference room, and we stayed there and went home at the end of the day and then came back. We had to transport the files back and forth, and it was like some of the files were 3 inches thick, 5 inches. And so it was, there's all this exposure about these people's lives. And so that was really important, that we not cross any barriers about, oh, my God, I know this person, and I know, oh, my gosh, I know that about them, and now I have all this information. What do I do with it? And I'm like, you don't say anything, and we process it here, you know.
So how did you do that with your team, where you do have this intense knowledge now of real people in your community? How did you set the groundwork for that and talk about it and make sure that that's where it stayed?
Right. You know, we did some initial activities about looking at, while we were in the training process, looking at, like, the lives of victims and what their survivors, what their experience is, and what like, our notions were about them. And so we could sort that out. And really, I think we did this thing where we had people with like, cut out figures, draw things and write things about what they thought about this person, and then what we could talk about, like, oh, well, what did you notice when you were thinking about, like, oh, what they might have experienced going through what they did and all of that. And so we really tried to set up that, yeah, we're going to hear a lot of stuff, and it's going to be hard, and we're going to use this framework. And we provided, in those days, we could provide some food. So we bought chocolate and fed them, which I thought was really important, and really tried to, in terms of the environment, provide a nice space where people could read the hard files. We had breaks where we could talk about things, and so we just kept building in that ability to talk and to be brief with each other.
Rebecca St. George, who's done work in Duluth in on sexual violence against Native women and intimate partner violence with Native women, and she's often talked about how important it was for, as they came together, to have that kind of shared experience of a community feast, sharing a meal, but also talking about the dreams that people were having after being immersed in the intensity of what was happening and what people were experiencing. So it sounds like you've also tried to do some similar kinds of things in setting a framework or a kind of wrapping the team with some support.
Yes.
Okay. Let's check in here and see if we have some other questions. I'm throwing so many questions out, I'm probably stealing everyone's questions. So we'll, again, encourage you, if you have a specific question for Jerry, or if you want to say a word about the work that you're doing and how that might relate to some of the experience she's had, by all means, press the number 1 on your keypad, and you'll be connected with us.
So far, you're doing a great job. There's nobody in the queue.
You're right.
Don't be shy, people. Come on.
Yeah, absolutely. Join in here.
And this is Lucy, but it just seems to me that with all these number of assessments that you did across a fairly large span of time then, that you were able to keep this, what they call this audit attitude, or this culture within your team over that kind of distance.
Yes. Okay. Yes, we were. And people looked forward to the audits. And they were like, oh, when are we going to have another audit? And I want to be on the audit team.
Yeah. Okay, it's really. In the water then.
I know it is, yeah. And I'd say that really, like, and we had people at various times from a number of different agencies. We had a detective with the Medford Police Department who was on the child welfare and self-sufficiency audit. And, you know, she was still a detective, and she had to respond periodically to calls, but her agency was really supportive of being there. And I think that in what helped to make us successful in doing this is that we had connections with the agencies that of people that were on the audit team. I told Jane yesterday that we have a community introduction to each audit where we invited community partners and agency heads to hear what we were planning to do and to get some picture of what the process was and all of that. And I think that supported them having buy-in in terms of their staff people being there and understanding what we were doing. And then we never updated them really during the audits because it's a process. And so, the agency people, because we don't know what we're going to find until we find it and then, you know, figure out what we're going to recommend. But we did, got support from agency heads because we had done that connection. And then at the end, we would have our council meeting. We would have a presentation about the audits and what happened and that sort of thing and what we were learning. So I think people found that helpful and nobody forced their staff to drop off.
Well, and it sounds like there were no surprises in the sense of it was very transparent about the process and who was involved and the kinds of things that you would be doing and the kinds of things that you would be looking at.
Yes, true. I think there's some really, I was thinking about this last week, there's some really great things that come about by doing this institutional analysis. And for the audit team members, we have all changed the way we think, really. I mean, that's all I can say. And it is the most, I love it. Honestly, I would do this for a living if I could spend enough money because it's just such a beautiful and non-judgmental way of looking at organizations and services and being able to hold that desire to protect victim safety and to hold offenders accountable in a way that we're providing them with or the people that work with them with support and tools for doing that, not just saying, oh, my God, you have to hold them, accountable. And, so I thought that was really, really important. And, my favorite, I think, thing is institutional time, which Jane can talk about, but honestly, like I use a lot of these tools every day in my work and in my life. It helps me to look at my life. And for our community, one of the things that the audits have been able to do is to provide us with a a guide about what to do in terms of training the staff of different agencies, if we have funds, who to bring into our community to help us improve our coordinated community response. And that's something that our county made a really strong commitment to many years ago. And so it's really helped to frame how we've brought people in. It's also helped us to get familiar with national trainers who are doing excellent work and to develop relationships with them so that they will come to our community if we ask them. And then they, you know, if we say, can you come back, they often say yes. And that's a huge benefit to the community.
Well, you had mentioned too, Jerry, this it being a way, and it really is. Lucy had mentioned this audit attitude, which is a bit of jargon coming out of the training, but it's really a big piece of the foundation of this institutional analysis community assessment approach, which is really most people in working in most systems want to do a good job. They don't want to be harmful. They don't
right.
want to hurt people. They don't want to make it worse. But we get caught in these routines and the way in which it's all organized that often doesn't work very well for people. And this is a way to really look at how is that put together. And in a very kind of supportive, as you said, way of assuming that everybody wants to do a good job. And
right.
there are going to be barriers and things that keep us from doing a good job. So let's figure out what those are and try to tackle them on a range of some that seem relatively easy and some that seem so huge that it may be take part of our lifetime to make significant change.
Sure.
I'm going to check back in. Shane, anybody?
Currently, there is nobody in the queue.
Okay. Well, we'll extend our invitation again, and feel free to press the number one at any point, and we'll be glad to pick up the conversation with you. Have I been cut off?
I know. You're there.
Okay. I have this intense paranoia about my past experience in getting cut off, so I need to check every once in a while to be reassured. I want to go back to something and ask about this, Jerry. You know, I have some familiarity with files in the child welfare system, and they really can be 3 inches, 4 inches, 5 inches,
oh, yeah.
6. You said you pulled out 100 of them?
Yes.
Did every team member read every 100 of them, or how did you handle that logistically to cover all that ground?
No, we had to divide the files up, and so our coordinator figured out, like, okay, well, we have this many people and this many files, and so we all did like 25 files, and then each team did a different set, 20 maybe. Each team of two did a different group of files, or two of us did the same file, and the other two did other files. So we didn't read every single file together, but what we did do is, like, towards the at different points in the day as we were reading files, we'd have all these flip charts up, and we could pause for a while, and then we had the file numbers up on the charts, and we would take a little while to say, okay, well, what have you been noticing about this and that sort of thing, so that people got to see that whole process. But it would have been pretty – it would have taken us a couple of weeks to all read them.
A couple years.
I know, really. And, like, I'm sure we transported many, many boxes back and forth every day from where we're doing our audit back to the secure facility. We fortunately had a young man who worked for child welfare kind of assigned to us as a gift to copy the files for us. So that was something that we didn't have to do because that would have taken a really long time. So that was a pure gift. A gift of aloha, so to speak, from them. Made our job easier.
So from a logistical kind of mechanics of the process point, did you have two people, at least two people, read each file?
Yes.
So there could be that kind of interplay between, oh, I'm seeing this and you're seeing that.
Yes. And the other thing we did, if it was, because we had several child welfare workers on the audit team, it was their file, they didn't have anything to do with it. So, I mean, they were involved in it. So, yeah.
And did that help build an environment then where the child welfare workers, you know, we all tend to get kind of defensive about work that we've done. And it can be kind of tricky sometimes to step back and look at that.
Yeah, you know, I think I noticed that a few times. And you know, so we're in a break or something. You know, we check in with them and say, you know, how you doing? Because it's hard to have especially for an agency where we're looking at intense case files and the people, some of the people who work there in the room, it's hard to have your agency examined. And so we, so to speak, I mean, that's not really the right word, but we really tried to reinforce, you know, what we were doing and that sort of thing. And people could come and talk to us if they were having a hard time with it. And honestly, the files were hard. It's hard to read them. It was emotional. It was frustrating. It was scary sometimes to hear, you know, what had been happening and to see all the things that we were able to see. So it really required us to do a lot of processing.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, I wanted to say that, you know, throughout the audit process, one of the one of our commitments was to do focus groups, which is it's usually a part of the process where somebody or two people from the team would we have questions that we prepared or we had an area that we wanted to listen to the experiences survivors with, and so we did focus groups. And really, like, for the community partners that weren't advocates or didn't work with our program intensely, it was such a learning experience for them. And I remember, like, one night we were at Dunhouse, our shelter, and we were doing a focus group. It was myself and a staff member from Self-Sufficiency. Women were talking about their experience of trying to apply for the emergency grant and what happened and all of that. And she was just blown away. I mean, she had no idea. She's someone who really cares about all this and you know, pays good attention to people and their lives. But she had no idea. So across the whole process, I think that's something that really community partners that were involved really benefited from, is really getting a much deeper understanding of what that experience of survivors is.
And how did you carry that then? You said you would pair up, say, yourself and one other
right.
member of the team or community partner, so that obviously you're not bringing the whole team into
right.
observe a focus group. How did you carry that back then to everybody else? So, you know, obviously in this example, the person from the self-sufficiency agency, she really got that distinct
yeah.
and unique benefit of hearing firsthand what those
uh-huh.
experiences were. And then
right.
how do you
we would
kind of connect everybody else with it?
I know. Well, we would provide a written summary to the audit coordinator, and then at a meeting, we would talk about our experience of being there so that it came back to the group. At a team meeting.
And I would imagine that put a whole new meaning and spin on those kinds of forms that have to be filled out
mm-hmm.
and completed and processed. And
right. And I really think what you said earlier about people want to do a good job, they think they're doing, not only they're doing a good job, but their agency is doing a good job, and in many ways they are, but there's many, audits are about identifying the gaps. we found there are, you know, many gaps. I mean, in our county and then in the whole region, one of the things that we realized with the self-sufficiency program, was that women come in to apply for the emergency grant and they're sitting in the lobby with many other people. And that it's not necessarily a safe thing for them. And so the agency committed to providing a separate space where they could wait into that has a little space for their kids and stuff like that if they have their kids. And initially, the staff was, of the agency, was like calling it the DV room. And I was like, okay. So that was something
Oops.
In our follow-up audit that with them, that they addressed with their own staff was to, you know, look at that kind of language that we use, because language is so important. And so to change it to the sunshine room or the rainbow room, like this woman's going to be in the rainbow room. And people knew what that meant, but it wasn't that stigma of like, oh, my God, the TV room. Yeah.
And you mentioned that you have done some kind of these little follow-up
yes.
audits. And has that been characteristic all along the way, both looking at the criminal legal system and child welfare, that you've kind of picked up some of the tools and used them again?
I don't think we're able to do a follow-up audit with law enforcement. We look at, like, how our audit recommendations are being implemented and kind of track that in some way, but with the Department of Human Services, they really wanted to do a incorporation of the audit throughout the region, and so they were amazing, and their manager got trained to be doing the audits with us, and they had staff from different their offices helping to do them, so that what it left was this group of people, and there were probably about 8 people from their offices that had this buy-in to the audit or the institutional analysis and what we'd done and the work that they had done on it, so that they can be champions of it within their own agency. And in our last meeting, really, I was the only team member there that wasn't from their department, because they have taken it on, and we've scheduled like follow-up things within the next year to see how they're doing. And that's them wanting to do that for themselves. So I think that's rich.
Absolutely. I'm going to check in, and since we're kind of up at the top of the hour and heading towards our final discussion here, again, invite any questions. Number one on your keypad to join in and join the conversation with Jerry. And I'll also check, Lucy, with you, because I know you've done a lot of community-based work and work as well with institutional analysis to see if there's anything on your mind that you'd like to ask Jerry.
Well, and this might be more of a final question than at this moment, Jane, but I'm just wondering, you've done all of these different agencies. You have all of this information that you look at individually, but is there a way to tie that all together? Do you do ultimately an audit of the audits? Do you do some sort of way of saying, system-wide, here's the impact? Maybe because the systems are so different, you can't do that, but if you did 911, and if you did prosecution, and if you did probation, then how do you, over a period of years, tie that back together? Does that make sense?
That's a great question, and I would love to know the answer, because I'm very curious about
the answer.
Myself, because really, you're right, that it would be really good to be able to look at the overview. And, you know, I think, what's it called? I can have a blank about the blueprint for safety.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that's probably something that would help us to do that.
Kind of the final step of all that? Or?
Yeah. And at this point, I don't know how other communities are doing, but we've had a significant drop in our funding, which is makes taking on big projects like this really hard right now. And so, we have to, we'll look to the future of how to be able to do that, because it is important to us, and we want to be able to continue this work in a positive way. I think that one thing that it does for us is to keep us connected to the bigger national picture and international picture about what's happening. And I find in doing the work that I do, that is so important. So for all of you in the call, really, I think that building those connections and keeping connected, even if you think you're asking a stupid question or something like that, it doesn't matter, because none of them are stupid, first of all. We'll learn from your questions. But really, to use the resources that you can to help you, your community, in the process.
Well, and you have really sustained the kind of attention, and an involvement in using this tool as a way of looking at the work that we do now over more than a decade. And to kind of wrap up here, Jerry, is there anything in particular that for you stands out as helpful in sustaining that attention across different people, different systems?
I think that we have to find people who want to do this and you're curious. I think people who have a desire to do institutional analysis, once they hear about it, and who are really curious, and I think curiosity develops in the process as well. So I think that's really, probably really important, and that we provide a lot of support for each other and encouragement to look at the hard questions, even when they might be questions that challenge us and our thinking and what we're doing in our own jobs as a result of what we're learning about the community. At heart, from my roots, really, I'm a community organizer, and so I love this because I keep saying love, but it's really true, because it has so many elements of that. It's so grounded in what I think is most important, which is the lived experience of survivors and of offenders, really, and children.
Do you find that you can't walk into a hospital or a bank or a school or an insurance company anymore without thinking about it quite differently?
Yes, that's true. And I wanted to say that we've had a very difficult about 15 months in our community where we've had 10 murders of women and children by domestic violence perpetrators. And so we're a tender community right now, and it's been very hard for people. And it's also provided an opportunity that we've been able to do more outreach to community members who would have never, or maybe never, but who've gotten involved in a whole other level. But I wanted to say that about our community. We're doing all this great work, and then at the same time, we've had numerous murders.
That must be tremendously hard for everyone.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I'm going to do one last check to see if we have anyone who wants to take an opportunity to ask a question or offer a comment about the work that you're doing in your own backyard. So press number one on the keypad. And that will connect you.
Well, and I do just want to acknowledge before we sign off here that I just think it's so amazing that an advocacy group would use this process for themselves, because that just doesn't seem to happen very often, but to see that as such a positive thing and how to strengthen the work that we're doing. Just great, and I just applaud your community for doing that and opening that up and being part of it, really engaging in the same sort of way and trusting the process. And, so congratulations.
Thank you. And I think that that Denise or someone will send out my contact information, and if you have questions or you just want to chat, feel free to call me or email me.
That's great. Well, thank you. Then if we can wrap up here, and appreciate you being on with us, Jerry, and all the work that you've been doing out there. You've just got my mind kind of spinning and thinking about, ooh, we could just really do a whole community-wide piece. And in a small community, that might be a very, very powerful thing to do. You could really make some community-wide change in a town of, 10,000-15,000 people. So that's just great.
But, yeah.
So before we go, though, I wanted to let folks know that our next networking call like this will be October 24th, and the topic will be assessing for racial disparity in your community's response to DV, and that comes with Christian Weber. Isn't that out of Minnesota, Jane?
Actually, they are located, I believe, in New York, the Center for the Study of Social Policy.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Yeah.
So that will be another interesting topic, and we hope that you can join us and look for those flyers on how to do that. So we thank you all for joining us and hope to talk to you next month. Take care.
Thanks, everyone, and thanks, Jerry, particularly for joining us today.